It's time to catch up with Jeffrey Polder. Good evening, Jeffrey.
Evening, Mark. We've got a great guest tonight, Rod Grinter, and he went down to my home state and coached New Norfolk after he finished at Melbourne. And New Norfolk coached by some great names like Arthur Oliver, Noel Clark, Athol Webb, Ricky Graham, Terry Farmer, Daryl Baldock, Darren Denneman, Peter Chisnell and Rod Grinter. So he'll be a good chat.
He will be. In fact, as of now, he is.
It's a grand old flag, it's a high-flying flag, it's the emblem for me and for you. It's the emblem of the team we love, the team of the red and the blue. Every heart beats true for the red and the blue.
Well, as Jeffrey Polter suggested, tonight's guest, featured guest, is Rod Grinter from the fertile recruiting ground around the Goulburn Valley Football League. He came to town in the mid-80s, and now, some 30 years later, it's amazing, 30 bloody years later, we've got him for a chat on our featured hour, thanks to the Emerald Hotel in Clarendon Street, South Melbourne. Good evening, Rod.
Good evening, Finey and Jeff. How are you going?
We're going well. Oh, that's, you see, we don't often get asked. That's very, thank you very, that's nice, Rod.
And I understand you're down in my hometown, or my home state anyway tonight, Rodley, on business?
Yes, that's right. I'm down here with work. I'm actually at Launceston at the moment. So I started off on Tuesday down in Hobart and worked my way up here. So, travelling around the state, very nice.
You've also got, Jeffrey believes, some connection either with a past players group or a finals group, grand finals group. Could you fill us in with that? He's caught you at the Emerald Hotel in some capacity.
Oh, yes, that was last year at the I'm chairman of the VFL club, which is the Virtually Forgotten Legends foundation, which was actually formed 22 years ago by three Carlton players, Alex Marcoux, Peter McConville and Phil Malin. And we hold events, two major events where we raise funds for charity and a couple of just networking events. So that's where I bumped into Jeff last year.
So it's been quite the carry through since you obviously pulled on a boot, as I imagine most of the football age kids did in and around Katandra. Tell the listener what it was like. We know, as I said, it's been a great area for football. The Goulburn Valley Football League and the cities and towns that it encompasses have produced some great footballers. But what made Katandra special for you as a kid growing up? And actually, was that where you specifically were from?
Yeah, that's right. Katandra West was where I was born and bred. I left there when I was 16, but growing up there was football in the winter, cricket and tennis in the summer, and it was a very sporting community, and generated a lot of good footballers and good sports people out of that area.
We actually underplay tennis as part of the sporting makeup of kids growing up. Certainly was for myself, and tennis, I imagine, in country Victoria was normally on lawn tennis courts. Given the Wimbledon's on at the moment, I wonder if they had lawn tennis courts around Katandra, because it was a bit of a treat, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had them in Shepparton, but not out at Katandra. We had the concrete courts out there and all the asphalt courts where we used to play on a Saturday morning, and then we'd play play cricket in the afternoon, or vice versa, cricket in the morning and tennis in the afternoon during the summer.
Rod, were you did you follow Melbourne as a youngster, or I guess you were zoned to Melbourne at that stage, were you, or were you drafted?
When I was growing up, my grandfather George Grinter played reserves football with Richmond, so my dad was a Richmond supporter, and for me, as a young kid growing up, you see the VFL on the telly, and you had to have a team, so my team was Richmond because Dad and my pop played for Richmond. But that quickly changed when I went down to Melbourne in 1982.
And did they follow your progress the year before you were at Melbourne?
Yeah, they had a development squad that was set up for all the young fellows around the area. We used to meet in Shepparton and do the development squad, and then I made the Norm Smith squad, which they played a couple of games down in Melbourne against another squad from another region. I can't remember where it was from, but played out at Waverley, and Ray Jordan was there having a look, and after one game out at Waverley, asked whether I'd be interested in coming down and playing the under-19s in the following year.
So through the under-19s and reserves football, in 1985, you were selected in the team, and from memory, your early days, there was some... I remember one early game with a number of goals being scored. Yeah. And from that point on, I wasn't quite sure what position Rod Grinter had come to Melbourne at. So I'm really interested to know where you played your football in the lead-up, in the under-19 and reserves, and whether or not you were that forward that I remembered you as when it all began.
Yeah, good memory, Finny. It was round three. I started as a forward, so played a lot of my footy as a junior forward. And same in the under-19s. And then when I got my chance to play my first senior game with Melbourne was in 1985, played on a half-forward flank. If I had have taken every mark that I went for, I would have had 20-odd marks. But obviously didn't impress Barras that much because he dropped me for the next week. And then I went back to the reserves and didn't play that well in the reserves, to be honest, and then got promoted again. And then put strung two together. And in my third game against Carlton at the MCG, I kicked five. So that was a nice little start, yeah.
You're always a lively sort of player. And, you know, and you ended up being fiery. Were you a fiery sort of player when you were young, Rodney?
Yes, I think, it was just the way that I played the game. It wasn't something... I don't think... I coached kids at St. Kevin's and had been doing so for the last 17 years. And I don't think it's something that you can actually
manufacture,
put into players. It's something that they're actually, they've just got in their makeup. And, yeah, that was the way that I played. I just played it pretty tough and hard.
Except for one famous footballer and one that I'll mention shortly because there might have been at times that you crossed paths. Most players who played the game tough and hard got it back tough and hard, and generally you knew that if that's the way you played, then that's what you were going to receive. The player I'm speaking of is Reece Jones, who's always admitted that he just never quite hit people as hard as he got hit back, and that was his great regret. But but in your case, it was certainly, bar one famous incident, and we'll mention it, but it was hardly something that was part of your game. It was generally you copped as much as you received, and that was the law of the land, I would have thought.
Yeah, look, a lot of the times that I got into trouble were, I was just what they would call today reckless, copped a little bit high, and it wasn't really in stand-up punching people or anything like that. It was all in the flow of play. There was a couple of incidents where I just lost my cool and did some silly things, but the majority of the times that I got into trouble were in the flow of play and just copying people high. If you were giving it out, well, you certainly got it back then. That was just the way it was.
Did you feel that Melbourne, who had been obviously now 20 years, by the time you've made your senior debut, more than 20 years since their last premiership and had earned the reputation or unfortunately the tag of not being the hardest team of the competition. Did you feel that there were times when you needed to impose yourself because if you didn't, then Melbourne's reputation would be enhanced as a softer team?
Yeah, look, I wasn't really aware of any reputation of them being a soft team. They certainly struggled to string together any consistent performances, from that 64 premiership. So coming into the team, like I said earlier, it wasn't something that I actually manufactured. It was just the way that I played. And, if there was one of my teammates got treated unfairly or untoward, well, I would certainly go in and fly the flag.
Finey mentioned Reece Jones before, being behind on KO blows. He wouldn't have been behind on points, I wouldn't have thought. did you tangle with him at all, Rodney?
No, not at all. I always picked my mark. I was always a little bit careful in that area. But no, Reece and I never really crossed paths that simply. You know, might have been a bit of a push and a shove here, but never got done for hitting each other or anything like that.
So after a couple of seasons where Melbourne, there were signs of maybe some slow improvement, along comes 1987 and the improvement is rapid.
Mm.
It coincides with the final season for a club champion, one of the most loved demons of all time. What was it like playing with Robert Flower? Not just playing with him, but understanding that he was a team that was starting to really take some strides, and here was an opportunity to give to Robert Flower what football had not given to him, and that was finals football.
Yeah, look, Robert was certainly a magnificent footballer and a magnificent person, and to have the opportunity to play with Robbie was something special, and obviously to give Robert the opportunity to play in finals footy in 87, which he'd never done through his whole career, was also something special. You know, do it for Robbie was the theme going around at the time, and you know, that 87 when we had a very good year, but we had a slump early, sort of mid season where we'd lost five in a row and we were just outside the five, and we had to beat Footscray at Footscray, and Hawthorn had to beat Geelong down in Geelong for us to make the five, and fortunately enough that happened, and Robbie starred that day. I think it was the day that Gary Lyon broke his leg, but Robbie starred that day, and we'd made the finals and went through those first two finals games. As you know, we were in a knockout, so you know, if we had a loss, we were out. I'm not sure which order it was, whether it was North first or Sydney, but we smashed them in both games by, you know, I think it was 100 points, or it was, you know, a fair bit. Yeah. And then we're able to obviously get into the preliminary final to front up against an awesome Hawthorn, who, you know, in that particular game, it was everything was going Melbourne's way. You know, we kicked with a win three out of the four quarters, and we had numerous opportunities to really seal the game in the last quarter, but just weren't able to do it. And Robbie ended up breaking his collarbone in that game, courtesy of Robert Depio Domenico, a nice little hip and shoulder. And yeah, then you know, getting near the end of the game, they just kept clawing back, and ended up getting us by a point.
You played with Robbie Flower at close quarters, and does he rate in your best sort of four or five you've ever seen?
Yeah, right? 100%. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. He was just for the size of the man and the things that he was able to do, the way he got out of trouble, the way he was able to deliver the ball was phenomenal. And then you were able to watch him play for the Big V, and you know, it sticks clearly out in my mind, some of the things he did for the Big V. But yeah, look, he was amazing for the size of him. And he was just a natural athlete. One of the things that I do remember, we trained really hard during pre-season's training, and because Robbie was a bit older, he got some leniency in terms of turning up to training. So we would start training the Wednesday after Melbourne Cup, and Robbie was allowed to come back to training sort of after Christmas. And we would have trained the house down for, you know, 2 months, 2.5 months, and then Robbie had come and we hadn't seen him for a while, and we'd be doing time trials and he'd be right up the front. We'd be doing long distance runs and he'd be right up the front. He was just he was a bit of a freak.
That final series, and of course our special guest Rodney Grinter was telling us about the all-important last game of the home and aways and the first couple of finals. You didn't play in those games, Rodney, and was that courtesy of the tribunal?
Yes, unfortunately it was. So I ended up, I think it was round 20.
One against West Coast.
How many rounds we have back then? 22,
yep.
Was there? But anyway, it was the second last game against the West Coast Eagles. Ended up got reported for striking and got 3 weeks. So I thought my season's over. Melbourne are going to make this. Well, potentially Melbourne can make the finals, and I'm not going to be a part of it. And yeah, I was really disappointed, but copped my penance and kept training and kept doing what I always did, and and obviously was out there watching them beat Footscray, and then went to the two finals games, and the second finals game, when we were well and truly up, I remember leaving at three-quarter time, and I went home, put the runners on, and pounded out 10K, because I knew now I had a chance of actually playing again that year in the preliminary final. And that week at training, I just trained the house down and was able to fight my way back into the team.
And played a really good game. You kicked a couple of goals, had 16 touches, and Hawthorn, of course, would play Carlton on a very hot day and lose that grand final. They were considered a big chance.
By a fair bit, too.
Yeah, about five goals thereabouts, and Reece Jones was the Norm Smith medalist for the great game at centre-back. But obviously the game ended in the preliminary final with that amazing moment, Jimmy and Buchanara. The story's been well told. Mm. Did you feel, and did the Melbourne players feel, that had you made it through to that grand final, then you might have been able to wrap your hands around the trophy?
Oh, no, look, I think they had so Carlton didn't play that weekend, so they had a week off because that was the way that the final systems worked. And Hawthorn and Melbourne just belted the suitcases out of each other that day. So Carlton would have been sitting up in the stands watching us and just rubbing their hands together because...
Rod, did Chrissy Mew have a suitcase that day?
So Chrissy Mew got he got knocked over, and we obviously had Robbie doing his shoulder, and so Hawthorn didn't go into that game, as we wouldn't have if we had got through tip top and top nick. So I think the result would have been similar if we had have got through in hindsight, but who knows?
I know you had a lot of shots in the finish, eye shoulder and others, and I'm not just going to blame him, but he wasn't very far out, was he? And you should have won. But, however, at quarter time, I remember Russell Green saying that he was standing there and he saw the paper. The papers were blowing one end, suddenly blowing down the other end.
Yeah, it was amazing. We won the toss, we kicked with it, and then at quarter time, the wind had circled around and was going the other way, and that happened for three quarters, actually, and then in the last quarter, like we should have, you're right. So there was Tony Campbell, there was Graham Yates, there was lots of opportunities during that last quarter where if we had to just kicked one of those goals that we should have, the result would have been much different.
And so on to 1988, and it was a pretty eventful year for Rod Grinter and for the club. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll unwrap it. He's bloody honest. Universally loved at the Melbourne Football Club. Rod Grinter was even through some travails that saw him miss games, one of the first picked, and when we return, we'll find out what those travails were in 88 and what the high points were as well.
Crunch Time is Anthony Hudson, Mark Robinson, Dermot Brereton and David King.
Maybe we just get too greedy or wanting to see too much every time they go out, but you really only get, 40-odd hours of football viewing a year. Of the 40 we're going to get from Collingwood this year, what have we really seen? We've had 28 so far. What have we really seen that gives you enormous confidence that next year and the year after are onwards and upwards?
Every Saturday morning from 11, the game's biggest names discuss the game's biggest issues. Crunch Time for Australian Property and Business Group. Invest today at apbgroup.com.au and sportsfantasyfree.com. Play now for your chance to win on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy.
Hi, I'm John Fowler from Lapine Funerals. If you find yourself in need of help with the practical, everyday things after the loss of a loved one, we are holding a series of Life Steps information seminars. A panel of speakers will offer advice and answer your questions on topics such as closing bank accounts and social media sites, living safely at home, preparing healthy meals, and coping with loss and grief. To find out more about our Life Steps program, contact Lapine Funerals on 8587 5700.
At Sites and Stores, we build websites. Custom designed websites featuring you and priced from just $397. We can even make your company website a customized online store from just $797. Hi, I'm Drew from Sites and Stores, and helping you get the most out of your online business is our business. Call us today on 1300 796 530 or visit getarealquote.com.au. Custom design business website starting at just $397. We're sites and stores.
At Toyota Material Handling, when they say they mean business, they mean business. Forklift business, that is. There's never been a better time to purchase a new forklift from Toyota's massive range. And for a limited time, purchase any selected new Toyota 2.5-tonne counterbalance forklift and get a free $500 Caltex StarCash card. Score a great Toyota forklift deal and score free fuel. Call 1-800-425-438 or visit toyotamaterialhandling.com.au.
Terms and conditions apply. Offer ends July 31.
If you're thinking about changing your energy provider, let me spend the next 24 seconds explaining why you should switch to Momentum Energy. For starters, they've got great value gas and electricity rates, they're 100% Australian owned and operated, and if you switch both your gas and electricity before June 30, you'll get a $100 welcome credit.
7 seconds, Tom.
Righto, thanks, mate. See how much you could save. Call Momentum Energy today on 1-800-SWITCH. Terms and conditions apply.
That's it.
Too easy.
At Munich Brauhaus South Wharf, there's one universal word that answers everything.
Fun, yeah?
Well, that's two words. But anyway, between 4 and 7pm, it's happy hour every day, with half-litre Bavarian beers at just $6.
Fun, yeah.
The famous pork knuckle and schnitzels are delicious.
Fun, yeah.
And the Bavarian bar girls, they're in charge of the...
Fun, yeah.
Just 10 minutes from Etihad, before or after the footy. Get stuck in at Munich Brauhaus South Wharf. It's like Oktoberfest every day of the year.
Fun, yeah.
The Peter Jackson VFL, this Saturday and Sunday, live on Channel 7. Head to vfl.com.au for the full list of upcoming broadcast games, results and news, or follow us on Twitter at VFL. The Peter Jackson VFL, this Saturday and Sunday, live and exclusive on Channel 7.
Max out your tax return with Flight Centre's airfare sale. Fly return to Hawaii from $495. Call Flight Centre now on 131 600.
On 11.16 SEN, evenings with Viney for John Blair Honda. If you bought your Honda from somewhere else, you paid too much. And the On Time Group, recruiting drivers now, ontimegroup.com.au.
Welcome back, and our special guest tonight, Rodney Grinter, back there in a moment. Good news for young Australian qualifier Barton in the tennis. He's playing another qualifier, Olivetti. Is it Matthew Barton? I think it might be. He had the game cessated last night at 5 points apiece in the second set tiebreaker. So he won that tiebreaker. Barton now leads 2-1 in the third set at 1 set apiece. And we'll keep an eye on Tomic for you. He's serving at 1-2 in the deciding fifth set. It is Matthew Barton. We'll keep an eye on both those games. Our special guest tonight is Rodney Grinter from, of course, Melbourne. And we've got to 1988. And first of all, Rodney, I'm getting great help, by the way, from Alan in Northcote, a very keen Melbourne man and wonderful facts and figures historian of Melbourne, all things Melbourne and Northcote and Northcote cricket. And he refers to you as Balls. Was that your nickname, Rod?
Yes, that is my nickname. I got that, obviously, when I came down to the Melbourne Footy Club, and it's quite a boring story, but I'll share it with you. When I came down, the Melbourne Footy Club said that they would get me some work, and there was a couple of senior players working over at the MCG doing some carpentry work, and it was Scotty Sutcliffe and Paul O'Brien. So they said to me, you can go over and help them. So I go over and help them, and I get introduced to them as, Rod Grinter, this boy from the country. And that particular night, Melbourne were training, the seniors were training, so I was only playing down the 19s, and the Peter Moores and the Robbie Flowers and the Stephen Hicks, Peter Giles are all coming in, and they're saying g'day to Obi and Scotty and who's your mate. And while they were working, they used to call each other knackers and balls and cock, come and hold this and come and do that. And they'd forgotten my name, so they just said, Robbie, this is balls, this is Robbie. And it just stuck from there. So,
yeah, I think, what did Ted Whitten used to call everybody? Pulse?
Croswell used to call everyone Tiger.
Well, that's how he became Tiger, of course. Early in 1988, you played the Doggies, and there was a famed incident with Terry Wallace. Again, these are sort of fabled, and rather than go back over the incident, it put you out for 6 weeks, and I guess it would have tested even of the most faithful coaches resolved to just bring you back in. But back in, you did come, and this time the team had a bit of purpose. You knew you weren't far behind the Hawks, the standard bearers in the competition, and the rest of the season saw Melbourne play some of their best football, certainly that I've ever seen the Demons play. It was a great year for Melbourne.
Yeah, look, we had a good group. We won the Knight Premiership in 87 and obviously made the finals in 87 and then came back in 88 to, you know, get to a position where, you know, we could play in the grand final. But early in that game, ended up being seven weeks because I missed... I was in hospital for a week with an infected hand from the incident with Terry, and there was no reports laid. So it was a trial by video case. So ended up going to the tribunal the following Tuesday and missing another 6 weeks of footy. But because it was a hand injury that I had through the incident, I was able to continue to train really hard. And the hand obviously fixed itself up over that time. And then when I was obviously available to play, because I was training the house down, I was straight back into the seniors and enjoyed a really positive back half of the year to get through to the grand final.
That penalty was resolved recently when someone offended at a club off field and had a hamstring or something, but they said you weren't, the penalty wasn't going to start until you'd recovered from the hamstring. So you were a bit lucky in a sense, weren't you?
Well, yeah, maybe, absolutely.
By this stage of your career, they weren't letting you too near the forward line, Rod. You were now a defender, or at times maybe a type of... I would have thought a close-checking defender. How would you describe your positioning at this stage of your career?
Probably after my first 2 years where I was sort of used up forward and I was inconsistent. Greg Wells was the seconds coach. And he threw me on. So my first 2 years, I played 11 games in my first year and 11 in my second year. And then in 87, Greg threw me back and I played off a half-back flank and I was sort of like an attacking defender. Yep. And then I found my niche in the senior team along with Brett Lovett on the other half-back flank, Jamie Dersmer, Earl Spalding at centre-half-back. And we had a very strong, stable back line. And was able to play my best footy as a halfback flanker.
You mentioned Greg Wells. John Northey, the coach, what influence and effect did he have on your
overall? Yeah, look, John was fantastic. So he obviously came in after the Barassi five-year plan. We were still averaging in 86, but then 87 everything clicked. And John was a real motivator and got everybody playing for the team and for Melbourne. It was all, everybody hates Melbourne. Melbourne had been down for so long. Anything that was written in the paper about Melbourne, he'd blow it up and put it in the change room. So he really G'd everybody up before we played and that sort of got everybody fired up. But we still had the nucleus of a really strong, committed group that loved playing footy for one another and helping each other out.
So by this stage, you've got a reputation as a pretty tough footballer, and I don't know whether it's intentional. You don't do anything to back off from that reputation with a close-cropped hairdo and a mullet, and the look sort of matches the reputation. But then...
Well, they all had mullets back then.
Well, maybe not everyone. And... But the look sort of matches up. But then we start hearing of, you know, what a great team man Rod Grinter is and how loved he is by the playing group and the coach. And White Line Fever and Rod Grinter start to be used in sentences together. Is there such a thing as White Line Fever? And if so, were you one of the early pioneers of its popularisation?
Yeah, well, probably, away from the contest, away from... the adrenaline and the heat of what we do out on the footy field. I would say, you press a few buttons, certainly I'll fire up, but, I'm sort of a lot more mild off the field than I was on the field. So that's where this White Line Fever, I guess, gets mentioned because, people know what I'm like off the field and see me on the field and I'm sometimes a bit crazy.
when you finished at Melbourne, you coached in Norfolk, down in my home state, and we mentioned before you came on all the famous players that had coached in Norfolk, and they would have made you aware fairly early, I guess, that they produced the great Peter Hudson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, now look, it was a great opportunity from when I finished playing to have a crack at I was still playing, and came down to speak to Glenn Orkey, and New Norfolk heard that I was coming down and made contact with me and asked whether I would have a chat with them. And I said, well, you go and talk to Glenn Orkey, and if it's okay with them, I'm okay to come and have a chat. And it was a lovely place, New Norfolk, the Valley of Love, they call it. And yeah, my wife and I and we had two kids at the time, moved down here, and yeah, we enjoyed our 3 years down here. We thought that we were going to actually settle down here. We enjoyed it that much, but all of my family and my wife's family are all from Victoria, so we were always going to probably head back home. But at the time, it was a beautiful place, and Norfolk had a very, very strong history of producing some really good footballers. Mm.
You played in a time that now footballers, the modern day footballers, wish they played in, even though they are well compensated on the other end of the scale, because there was a lot of socialising, not only between your own teams, but with other teams and umpires after the game. And and that virtually forgotten legends group of yours, I imagine, is a great opportunity to get together with teammates and opponents and catch up. Is that something that you still cherish, because the modern player won't be able to do it when he gives the game away?
Yeah, it's why I do it. Finally, it's why I'm involved in the VFL club. It's why I'm chairman of the Melbourne Footy Club Past Players, because that's the thing that that you miss when you finish playing footy. You miss that camaraderie. You miss the mateship. So if you can replicate that in any way, shape or form from my point of view, bring it on, because that's what I love doing. I love catching up with and even opposition. So the VFL club is not just a Melbourne Footy Club thing. It is a anybody from anywhere, and there are a lot of past players from other clubs that attend our events, and it's always nice catching up with them, finding out what they're doing and how their lives have turned out post post footy.
Now, I know Player was a bloke that, you know, he's made friends and enemies in football in various amounts on and off the field as a player and as a coach, but he's always good to have a drink with. How do things sit with you, and how did they sit with you post your playing career?
To be honest, I've always been respectful. I've always been polite to Terry, but really I've never really sat down and had a beer with him after what transpired back in '88.
Yeah, and that's understandable. I mean, it's a famous incident, but it doesn't, and thankfully it didn't be the thing that ended your career, because there were players that had been in serious incidents that weren't able to come back. And just one last very quick one, and that is, at the end of your career, full circle sort of type thing, you found yourself back in the forward line. It was a pretty effective move late in your career.
Yeah, it was. It was, I was sort of slowing down a little bit. You know, I wasn't the quickest bloke at my peak anyway. And as I was getting older, as happens to players, they slow down a little bit. And John left, and we had Neil Barm come to the footy club. So Barmy gave me an opportunity up forward, and had two years under Neil, and kicked a few goals and enjoyed that last part of my footy career up forward.
We've got to leave it there, but a strange thing happened. You became a dead-eye dick. You barely ever missed.
Probably early in my career, I just didn't get it enough to warrant continuing to stay in the forward line. But, I was a reasonable set shot for goal.
So maybe something there that you can impart on kids at St Kevin's and various others. It's
absolutely
part of the game that has improved. It's been great catching up, Rod, and thank you so much for being frank.
Thanks for coming on, Rod.
And also being Rod Grinter, because the enormously popular demon got a whole lot of great SMSs as we went through the show as well. Well done, mate.
Good on you, Finey, and thanks very much for having me on, and good on you, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is, I must say, a most enjoyable chat.